step into the world of power, loyalty, and luck.
I'm going to make him an offer he can't refuse.
With family, cannolis, and spins mean everything.
Now, you want to get mixed up in the family business.
Introducing The Godfather at ChumbaCasino.com. Test your luck in the shadowy world of The Godfather slot.
Someday, I will call upon you to do a service for me.
Play The Godfather now at ChumbaCasino.com.
Welcome to the family.
Caroline, Willie, D-Mace, 102.5, 106.3, The Game and The Game Nashville app. Predators with a clunker last night. A tough one to watch last night. Really, from the jump, it felt like the Predators were kind of skating through peanut butter. But joining us now to break it all down, what we saw last night and really kind of the state of the Predators, is our friend Chris Mason. C-Mace, I had to start with UC Soros. It's the fifth time last night that he was benched this season. Third time he's benched in the last 3 weeks. What is your concern level with UC Soros?
Well, long term, not a whole lot. I think the season has definitely presented some challenges with him and his game. I think there's been some adjustments in the way that he's maybe had to play in terms of the mental preparation. Lately, I think the team in general has been doing a good job of not giving up a whole lot. A lot of the chances I think that teams are trying to create is shifting in the way it has in years past, and even more so with the way I think Bruno's team is possessing the puck a lot. So you don't get necessarily as much volume. So Soros hasn't got as much volume as he has in the past. He came off that dominant stretch there in December where he went 10-1. You know, we thought, all right, here you go. He's back. He was for a good portion of that game. And then since then, it's kind of been back and forth. There's been some up and down. Obviously, when you watch a game like last night, you know, you're giving up goals that you don't normally see him give up when there's a clear sight line. You know, even if it's a good scoring chance, he's historically stopping more of those, you know, more consistently. Right now you're seeing them kind of go in. So there is definitely a little bit of concern. I mean, you know, I don't know if anything's been said today. I'm just driving to the airport right now. But, you know, now you kind of have a decision where, well, who are you starting against Dallas? You know, you could easily obviously go for back to Soros and say, all right, we got to get him going, which is the way you do. But Lankinen came in. He played well. He's played well when he's gotten the net. So, you know, it's the concern, I would say, out of 10, if I want to pick, I'd say maybe it's a 2 long term. But when you look at the standings and the way teams are playing around them, you know, that probably goes up a couple notch. But I'm not concerned. I know how good Soros is, and, you know, nothing's really changed in that regard for me.
And I'm glad you brought up that game in Dallas. You have two incredibly important games against Dallas coming up here in the next couple of weeks. But looking at this game tomorrow night, who would you, if you were Andrew Brunette, who would you start in net?
Well, I could really make an argument for both. It's just a matter of, you know, I know this determination is a conversation that the coaches, you know, have amongst themselves. I would look at the situation. They don't play another game to Anaheim. You know, if I'm Ben Vanderklok or Andrew Brunette, and you think, hey, you know what, let's just give Juice this. I could make an argument for this. Let's give Juice a mental break. We don't play on Tuesday. You know, work on his game in practice. Just let him, you know, clear his mechanism, so to speak, and then be ready for that game or Anaheim. Or sometimes coaches will have a conversation with the goaltender and say, hey, Juice, you know, do you want to – you got Dallas. We know we pulled you out in the third period. You know, give you that off to get you ready for Dallas. But at the same time, I think, you know, you got to consider Lankinen in the equation as well. He's played well. He came in last night. I know the game wasn't over, but it was pretty much over. But he came in, did a good job. He's played well for this team, and he's honestly earned, you know, more playing time. If they want to take that approach where they rest Soros, this would be a good chance, you know, to give him that break. But, you know, you're playing Dallas Stars, and this is a rivalry. This is a team that's been very competitive. So I would, just my opinion, I would probably go back with Soros and then maybe reevaluate after that if I was the one making the decision. But having said that, I wouldn't be one bit surprised if Lankinen gets that game.
We'll talk with Chris Mason, better known as C-Mace, one half of the Nashville Predators broadcasting team on television. Now, C-Mace, you did bring up Lankinen. And whose fault was that? Because I'm watching it, and Lankinen gets outside of the net to try to get the puck. And we've seen that many times where goalies get outside the puck. You get outside the net to get the puck. But it seems like there was maybe some miscommunication between he and the next guy. So who would you put that more on, Lankinen or the guys that were around in that on his team?
Well, obviously everyone's going to take some of the blame, but if I'm the goalie back there when I played, if I went out and I'm the one with the ball, with the puck, and I'm the one going to make that decision, that's all on me. I take that 100% responsibility because I'm the one that's able to make the decision. Yes, you would like to have communication from your team. If you do, sometimes you want to wait for your defenseman. It's not an easy thing to come into a game in the third period after you've been sitting on the bench for 2.5 hours and, you know, especially make those fine plays. But you do rely on the communication from your teammates in those situations. So I don't know what that was, but it looked like that he was waiting to hear something he didn't, and obviously waited too long. Even if, you know, there's a defenseman, and you got to be loud. Like Hal Gill was saying on the broadcast, too, when he's yelling at his goalie's coming back, he's like, man on, or move it. So there's no doubt, you know, that you're under pressure. If a defenseman's coming down and he's going back for the puck, and I know he has his back turned toward the next attacker, their forechecker, I'm yelling, man on. So he knows when he gets that puck, he has a decision. He's got to make a play right away. There's no hesitation. So I'm guessing that he didn't hear anything on that play. But if you don't, you have to recognize, you know, the pressure yourself. And then you just do kind of the play where you get it up on the glass and fire it as hard as you can so the guys can kind of get back into position and recover. So I always put that on myself if I ever made that play. And believe me, I made a bunch of those. But it's not easy to do, though, when you're coming into a game because you're not as sharp as you normally would be in those situations.
Absolutely. Yeah, to me it just looked like a communication thing. He made it here. Yeah. He wanted to hear something, didn't hear it, and he got himself in a situation where it wasn't advantageous for the team. You talked about UC Soros and you know, your long term. You're not worried about him long term, and neither am I long term. But we had a conversation about the team long term. Right now, they're sitting in a space where they are, you know, the first wild card team, and you would want to take advantage of it now while you're still in the thick of things, because as you start to move on in the season, you don't know how these young players will react. Will they get worn down? And then you're in a situation now you're fighting and clawing when you had that one seed in regards to the wild card and you never took advantage of it. So are you worried about that moving on with the team, not just with UC Soros?
I am, because, you know, you look at the cluster of teams, and there's a lot of teams that, you know, could easily be in that spot. Edmonton being one of them that will probably leapfrog a bunch of teams the way that they're playing. And when you look at their roster, and one of my reasons for concern is right now the team is like really healthy. And as the season goes on, you tend to get dinged up and guys miss time here and there. So I feel when you can take advantage of a healthy roster in this situation. They've played more games than most teams in the Western Conference, so a lot of those teams behind them have games in hand, which is, you know, can play for or against, because I guess the Predators have a lighter schedule in terms of the amount of games they play, but it also means other teams are playing more, so they have, you know, those extra games to make up, you know, moves in the standing. So I am concerned about that because there's a lot of quality. I would say the only teams that are completely out of it would be Anaheim, Chicago, and San Jose. And other than that, any one of the teams, you know, that's wild card down, I think have a legit chance to make it. And so that does scare me, you know, the recent trend of what's going on. And that game last night, you know, I guess we'll see how they come out against Dallas. That was a clunker. And I love Caroline's comment there. It looked like they were skating in peanut butter. I don't think I've heard that one before. So I might have to use that one. But
you can take that one. Just quote me on it.
I will. I'll give you credit for that one. That was pretty good. It made me laugh. But it was that's true, though. So, you know, hopefully they'll come out. And obviously, you know, after the game, the coach was not happy, and it was not a good game. So I look for these guys to respond. But I am concerned right now with a healthy roster. Can't keep sliding down and letting other teams catch you.
Chris Mason is with us. And Mace, another thing that I could just tell when I hear Andrew Burnett talking after a game like that, that he knows he's been leaning pretty heavily on Philip Forsberg, Gus Nyquist, Ryan O'Reilly. Those guys have been unbelievable. But you can just hear it. Like he's looking and hoping. And Colton Sissons has been incredibly good. He got another goal last night. He's been awesome. But there needs to be more of those guys, right? I can just tell he feels like he's leaning a little too much on that top line. So can they get more? It's like he's looking around saying, I need some people to step up here.
Yeah, absolutely. That's, you know, I feel like we have that conversation with him, you know, in the mornings of games or whenever we get a chance to talk to him. You know, you look at it two ways. There's huge opportunity. Obviously, this team is going through a rebuild or whatever the name is, whatever you want to call it. But they put themselves in a position where, you know, the expectations have raised, I think, in terms of the way that we view this team, the way that the fans do. They played so well. The leadership transition here has went, you know, almost impeccable the way that, you know, they've developed a really good culture. Even they didn't play great last night. They played like crap, but they still worked their butts off. And I can live with that. And that's one thing, probably the thing I respect most about this team is no matter the situation, whether they're playing an unbelievable game or a bad game, they work their butts off. And it's going to happen. But these young players that are in the NHL right now have an opportunity that, you know, it can work for them or against them. They have more playing time than they probably would have if the Predators are, you know, a team that's, let's say, in the mix for a Stanley Cup or a competing team. But it can also work against you because, you know, if you're not playing well and producing, then they say, well, I don't know if this, even though you may be a young player and you got a lot of years ahead of you, you can sometimes get pigeonholed where, I don't know if he can do it. Yes, he's got skill. Yes, he can do this. Yes, he can skate, all these types of things. But can he play when the chips are on the table? Can he defend? Can he be consistent? And I know that's a lot of pressure, and sometimes that's not fair. But the state I think the team is in now, you know, you have to look at this as a player and put that pressure on yourself. Because, you know, a lot of people, you know, you only get so many opportunities because next year you got the next group coming in. You got Kemmel in Milwaukee. You got a bunch of, you know, players that are in the pipeline, a lot of good prospects. It's the best league in the world. You know, you have this opportunity. And in order for this year's team to make the playoffs, they have to have contributions from the young players. And that's just the reality of it. That's just the fact of life. And they do need that. So it's a lot of pressure. But at the same time, you know, you can see that frustration, I think, from Burnett because consistently it hasn't been there. It's that second and third, you know, that secondary scoring. As you mentioned, Colton Sissons is going to probably smash his career totals in every department. He's been awesome. He's got more opportunity. He's taken advantage of the opportunity. We need more guys, you know, I think the younger guys consistently to take advantage of theirs.
So I think that becomes the question, right? And I don't know if that anybody can answer it right now, but how patient can you be? I'm sure if you're Andrew Burnett and you're in there every day going, I've been patient, right? I'm keep rolling those guys. How long does he keep giving them the leash at Barry Trotz as well before they might try something else, right? Because it's been basically this group. And as you've mentioned, knock on wood, they've been pretty healthy, but they haven't gone and dipped down to Milwaukee and say, well, let's try this guy or that guy and see what happens with that formula.
Well, this is the billion-dollar question, because if you're the coach and you're the players on the team, obviously your only objective, I know where, you know, you want to develop and you go through this rebuild, but as your objective as coach is to win hockey games. So, you know, you need to do it however you see fit that night. You're not thinking necessarily long-term. You are on the outside, obviously, and that's the organizational goal here is to develop players and rebuild and give these guys experience. So, you know, his hands are probably tied in a lot of those circumstances, But if you're the organization, you know, Barry Trotz has said that, you know, the players are going to determine whether, you know, they get what we do at the deadline. And if they've kind of put themselves in the spot where they're in the conversation right now, and a lot of hockey left to be played before then. So I guess it has to be a collective agreement. So, all right, where are we at here? Do we feel we have enough if we make a couple tweaks? Because if you want to add, you're right, Willie, though, you could, you know, use Milwaukee. But do we want to, you know, take a chance of bringing up, you know, a guy, let's say Kemmel is the guy we're talking about. Do we want to bring him up? He's only 19 years old. Or is it better for him to stay in Milwaukee for his long-term development? Or do we want to try to win now? We need a guy who can, you know, has got his shot and maybe his power play prowess or whatever. So it's a lot of tough decisions that obviously I'm not qualified to make. But I think that's something that, you know, will be determined here probably the next month and a half.
Yep, and hopefully the group, you know, comes back and shows like they did last year that they can do it. Last one before, of course, we do need to kind of get to the plane in a few minutes here. But the Phil Tomasino hit late. He gets a match penalty. I have yet to talk to somebody that, in retrospect, I talked to the Flames announcers last night. I was listening to Elliot Friedman's podcast this morning. He and Jeff Merrick broke it down. Nobody thought that that was a slew foot. You and Howe, both Calgary announcers, plus Merrick and Friedman. But if you get a match penalty, right, there are you are in danger of being suspended further.
Right.
I haven't heard anything one way or the other yet. I'm hoping Phil Tomasino, who is not a dirty player or anything, if you really slowed that down, it looked to me like the referees were saying, you know what, it's 6-3, we're going to have a big fight in retribution if we don't do anything here. Let's give them the 5 in the game and everybody will cool down. I don't know if that's what they did or not, but to me, I hope there's no further punishment for Phil Tomasino there. That should be rescinded.
It didn't warrant more punishment, I didn't believe.
Yeah.
No, for sure it didn't. I mean, I get the, you know, just say, hey, let's calm it down. The temperature's getting, you saw the Flames getting riled up. But I saw the Flames players come back to the bench. They watched it. They had the iPad and then they were shaking their heads to each other, like, no, it wasn't dirty. It was, you know, obviously he hit his head on the ice, which, you know, we all know that nobody wants that to happen. It was scary, but it wasn't, I don't think, Phil Tomasino, you know, they went shoulder to shoulder. You know, he didn't follow through and sweep the guy's legs out from him, which is a slew foot. You have to fall, you know, you go from behind and it's almost like you're pushing back on the front of his chest and then kicking his legs out from behind him. That's what a slew foot is. He definitely didn't do that. It was a contact with the shoulder. And Tomasino ends up falling forward. So I think everybody in the hockey world would probably agree that that wasn't a slew foot, but it'll be very interesting to see. Because I think because he got a match, now the league automatically has to review it. And I don't think he can get cleared to play until they clear that match penalty, which I think they will. I just cannot imagine that ever receiving any sort of further action.
Right.
It was a hit. It was maybe circumstantial, the call, I think, more than anything in the game.
And also, if there's going to be a suspension or something, usually by now, the middle of the next day, you hear from the safety department say there will be a hearing. We have not heard anything like that. So let's keep
not.
Our fingers crossed. Right.
Yeah, and I just saw Phil Tomasino. I'm at the airport, and I just saw him drive by. So he's getting on the plane today, if anyone's
So that
wondering.
Should be a good sign, right?
Yeah, that's a good sign. I would think so.
Is he driving fast, cutting people off in traffic, you know, taking on bad boy persona?
Well, he slew-footed the car in front of him.
Classic.
You know, he actually was in that third period. He was playing well. I thought they had elevated him, and I thought he was kind of given. Remember, that all of a sudden, they were within two. They had that fluky goal by McCarron, and you're thinking, one more, and they could get a little nervous over there on the Calgary bench.
Yeah. No, they were playing well. I think that was the only line, to use Caroline's reference there, that wasn't skating in peanut butter.
Yeah, they got out of the peanut butter.
They cleaned all that up. Yeah, I'm glad that they did that just in time.
They had some jam to their game, so there you go.
Touche, C-Mace, touche. Chris Mason, appreciate you for joining us. C-Mace, safe travels to Dallas, and we'll chat with you soon.
Okay, thank you, guys.
All right,
take care.
Appreciate it. Willie is on his way to Dallas, so safe travels to Willie as
See you,
well.
Willie.
Coming up next, we'll get into some questions for D-Mace. Ask D-Mace. Coming up next, 615-737-1025 is our phone number. Caroline, Willie, D-Mace. We're brought to you by Zen Sports. Start earning cash rewards on your bets today. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-889-9789. Terms and conditions apply. Must be 21 or older and in Tennessee to bet.
D-Mace. He played 15 years in the NFL.
Quick throw. Touchdown, Derek Mason.
He had over 12,000 receiving yards.
And there he goes! 80 yards for the touchdown!
And now you can ask him anything. Have a question about football or life? Now's your time to ask D-Mace.
We'll welcome you in.
Now on Caroline, Willie, and
D-Mace.
On 102.5 and 106.3, The Game and the Game Nashville app.
Ask D-Mace. Get those questions in for Derek Mason. 615-737-1025 is our phone number. Taking your calls and your texts, all of your questions for D-Mace. Ask D-Mace is presented by Calabria Pizza. Come try their pizza in Goodlettsville and Mount Juliet because life is just too short to eat bad pizza. Let's get into those phones and those questions for D-Mace. Our phone lines are driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. Steve is on the line. What's up, Steve?
Hey, good morning, guys. Really do enjoy the show.
Appreciate it.
I'm a season ticket holder for the Predators. That call, you brought up that call last night against Thomas Hill for Slewfoot. I'm not going to sugarcoat this. I'm sorry. But that was ridiculous. And I'm not the only person that said this, but every time – not every time, but most of the time we play a Canadian team, the calls go toward Canadian teams, and I'm tired of it. I don't know what can be done about it, but I just want to vent because that call last night against him was wrong. It should never have been called, and I don't know what can be done about it, but I just want to vent. Thank you for accepting me.
Yeah, I appreciate your call, Steve. Thank you. I don't think that there is some sort of, and I'm not saying that Steve is alluding to this, but I don't think that there's some sort of master plan that the NHL is cooking up to give Canadian teams all the calls, especially when it comes to the Predators. But I will say, I thought that was a ticky-tacky and unnecessary call last night.
I'm all for the conspiracy theory. I really am.
This is the conspiracy theory hour with D-Mace
exactly.
and Caroline.
We are all for it, but in this situation, I don't think that's the case. I think the league will go back and review it and you know, just sort of end it where it began on the ice and not take it any further. I can't see a suspension moving forward.
If there is any further punishment, that is when I will get incredibly
exactly.
angry.
Absolutely.
Because that what we saw last night from Michael McCarron did not warrant any further further suspension or any further discipline from the league. Greg is on the line. What's up, Greg?
Hey, I want to talk a little college football with y'all, if I could.
Absolutely.
Get this out. Mr. Mason,
yes.
And I always enjoyed you when you played with Mr. McNair. I'm from Mississippi, so we enjoyed you guys, your connection. I was going to ask you, do you think, and this is for Caroline, too, that the Big Ten, at least the top of the Big Ten, is caught up with the SEC? We saw it last year with the Buckeyes. They probably should have beat Georgia if Ryan Day manages that last couple of minutes a little bit better to get his kicker a closer field goal. And if Mr. Harrison didn't get hurt, maybe you might see up there in Tennessee. They may have beat Georgia last year, and we just saw Michigan beat Alabama. And then I know Caroline's LSU Tiger. And kind of maybe this is also in terms of Tennessee, but what do you look for as far as who would be in contention for the playoff next year? Because you think – Bama and Georgia. We'll see with Ole Miss losing Judkins. They have a great portal, and they got a lot of people in. I would think Missouri is going to be tough. They got a lot of people coming back. Texas should be right there in the SEC and Oklahoma. And then maybe Tennessee. LSU may be ahead of Tennessee, and I just asked Caroline if they get somebody to replace Daniels. Who do you kind of see next year challenging? And maybe is Washington somebody, now they're going to the Big Ten, and somebody that we'll see there more often? Enjoying you guys' show. I like y'all's show. You do a good job up there. We appreciate you.
Thank
appreciate
you
it, Greg.
So much.
Thanks for your
Greg.
Call.
It's hard to kind of, you know, sort of quantify that. I mean, because I'm a Big Ten guy, and I'm always going to be a Big Ten guy. But living here in the South, I have come to not only enjoy SEC football, but appreciate what the North don't get to see on a week-in, week-out basis.
Right.
They may get to see it a lot more now because television has changed, but you don't see, you know, all of the SEC teams. And they got some damn good teams. And now the Big Ten, too, it's going to be interesting moving forward now because USC comes to the Big Ten, UCLA, Washington,
Oregon.
And then to the SEC, you got Texas, Oklahoma. Who else is going to?
Just Texas alone.
So it may change the dynamics again in regards to, you know, how does the SEC remains the top dog? I think regardless who wins this year, I'm pulling for Washington. Everybody knows why. I don't sugarcoat it. Just because Michigan's a Big Ten team doesn't mean I'm going to root for them, because I'm not. That's heresy. You don't do that. But it'll be interesting moving forward to see how this back and forth starts to go with the Big Ten, because essentially that's what it's going to be.
Yeah.
The Big Ten versus the SEC. Now
that's you got what
the
Big it was this year. Exactly. Two SEC teams and two Big Ten teams in the college
basically
football
playoff. So, and I know Washington is not a part of the Big Ten yet, but we consider them a Big Ten team. You know, they'll be there pretty soon next year. So it's going to be interesting to see, you know, the dynamics moving forward. It may not be as easy because they're expanding the college football playoffs. If they kept it at four, then it'd be really interesting to see if you get two Big Ten teams getting in, you get two SEC, who gets left out and this and that. Now, everybody, no one should complain, because everyone should get a representative out of their conference. The Big Ten, the SEC, I can't say the Pac-12. I don't know what they're going to be. But they still may get somebody out of there. The Big 12 and the
ACC.
So they're going to get representatives in the college football playoffs. So it may be a little bit harder to – you may not be able to quantify it until, like, the last couple of games of the season. Because I wonder, how many unbeaten teams will there be next year? Because they're merging these college football teams, these conferences now.
Maybe one.
Mm. How many do we have? We have two now with Washington and Michigan. Yeah, right now. But at the end of the season, we had Washington, Michigan. Who else? Was anybody else under? Well, at the end of the regular
Florida
season.
State.
Regular season. Washington, Michigan,
Florida State,
and Georgia. The regular season.
Regular season, yeah, Georgia.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And then we had Liberty, yep. That was 12-0-2.
Mm-hmm. So 13.
We had 13-0. So we had five undefeated teams. Will we have that next year?
No, because Michigan's schedule inherently gets more difficult with USC.
I don't even think Michigan's going to be in it next year. Their team, they're losing a lot.
They are losing a lot.
They're losing, and they may lose their coach, too.
And Washington's schedule gets inherently more difficult because Washington's schedule this past year, and not to take anything away from what Washington has done, because every time I want to count Washington out, they've proven me wrong. So I've been very impressed with Washington. Mm-hmm. Their schedule gets more difficult because the only difficult game that they had in their schedule this past year was Oregon, and they beat Oregon twice. The SEC gets significantly more difficult, adding Texas and Oklahoma into the fold, and you're getting rid of divisions. So Georgia now plays Alabama next year. They don't do that every single year. To answer his question about has the top of the Big Ten caught up with the SEC, top to bottom, the SEC is the most competitive and the most difficult conference in all of college football. And I heard Paul Kaharsky earlier this week on the morning show calling me an SEC homer, which I think is absolutely rich that Paul Kaharsky can critique one of my college football takes when I think Paul Kaharsky watched his first college football game of the year on January 1st in the Rose Bowl. But it is top to bottom. I mean, Iowa was in the Big Ten championship game, and they got shut out by a Tennessee team that was kind of a middle-of-the-road SEC team this year. So I think top to bottom, the SEC is better, but we saw it on the field. Michigan beat Alabama, and Michigan was the better team, I think, for a majority of the 60 minutes in that game. Texas is going to be an SEC team. Washington, which is going to be a Big Ten team, beat Texas head-to-head. I think that you're starting to see the transfer portal and NIL kind of level the playing field a little bit, and I think that the best example of that is the national championship game. Yeah. The SEC is not represented in the national championship game. That's only the second time in the history of the college football playoff when you're not going to have SEC representation. Because Alabama used to be able to stockpile players at every single position. They can't do that anymore, because if you are going into your second year of college football and you're still third or fourth in the depth chart, you're out of there. Mm-hmm. You don't want to be there anymore. So the riches are spreading around a little bit. I think we also see that with Ole Miss in Missouri. Kind of middle of the road SEC teams. They're not the brands of an Alabama or a Georgia. They are now seeing the benefits of players from Alabama or Georgia not wanting to stick around anymore. So I think that you're seeing more parity in college football, and that's a positive thing. And it's not just in the SEC. It's also in the Big Ten and the Big 12 as well.
Yeah, and to me, I think you didn't see the best team representing the college football playoffs. I think Georgia was the best team in the country. But they ran up against an Alabama team who just had their number that day. You know, it was a close game. They ended up winning it. And you know, Alabama pulled away some. But I still do believe that Georgia was the best, they were the best team. Mm-hmm. And so you had the best team not representing the best conference. Alabama's still a good team, but Alabama had their flaws. Michigan's a good team, but Michigan has their flaws. So whether, you know, from top to bottom, I still believe, and I'm a Big Ten guy, but I still believe the SEC is a better conference from top to bottom. Now, that may change next year. It may change. I don't know. Moving forward. But this year and years past, I think the SEC has been the better conference from top to bottom.
And I will say, I watch a lot of bowl games. Big Ten football is boring as hell. My goodness. Snooze
fest.
Yeah,
if you got to watch an hour, then I would say, they're bad. They're bad. Yeah.
Snooze fest. And that's no knock on the Big Ten. I got two Big Ten teams representing in the college football playoff. But can you maybe throw the football?
Goodness. They try, but they can't,
gracious.
I guess.
Goodness gracious. All right, we'll get back into your questions for D-Maze coming up next. We'll take your calls. We'll take your text. 615-737-1025 is our phone number. Caroline, Willie, D-Maze, we're broadcasting live from the Spring Hill Heating and Cooling Game Nashville Studios, keeping your home feeling comfortable all year round. Visit springhillac.com. Ask D-Maze. Get those questions in for Derek Mason. 615-737-1025 is the phone number. If you have a thought, we'll take your calls, we'll take your texts. Plus, you can make your silly underdog picks for your chance to win weekly prizes. You can play at thegamenashville.com or the 1025 The Game app. Silly Underdog Picks is presented by Volunteer Hose and Gasket. Get back into your questions for D-Maze. One texter says, D-Maze, do you think that Derrick Henry has done enough to get into the Hall of Fame? And if not, what more does he need to do?
Well, if you're asking me, I think he's done enough. Now, it's not like the cup is running over, but he's done. It's right there.
Yeah.
It's right there. It's like, okay, now you've reached that line where, okay, you qualify for it. I think Derrick Henry deserves an immense consideration on being a Hall of Fame player. Since 2018, I mean, not many backs have done. And it's not just his impact on the game has been, and a lot of times when it comes to, you know, running backs like that or whatnot, how did you impact the game? And there's nobody that knows football can say Derrick Henry didn't impact the game at some level. He's the last of the dying breed. He's the last of the, you know, sort of this proverbial big back, this pounding,
big bruising
back. Yeah, we haven't seen. Now, there may be a guy that comes out of college and, you know, but to me, Derrick Henry was a generational back. There's been no, you know, there was a point where it was a cutoff, like that big bruising back. It was a cutoff. And then they went to the more elusive backs and backs that can catch the ball out the backfield. You had to be versatile. And then here comes Derrick Henry. And it was like, wow, we hadn't seen this in a very long time. And he proved it in college. He's been a winner his whole career. He was a winner in high school. He was the best back in high school. Best back in college. And then he comes
best
to the NFL.
In college.
Yeah. Then he comes in the NFL, and he's the best back in the NFL, one of the best players in the National Football League. So he, to me, is a generational back. He did change. He did have an impact on the league, not just the Tennessee Titans. So if you're asking me, yeah, I think he has done enough, but he can do more. And we've discussed that. I don't want his career to be sort of this fading away type of thing. I want him to still be relevant. And I think if he can still be relevant, that will help his case even more.
I do wonder, at what point, if we're not already there already, do Hall of Fame voters need to shift their perspective on voting? Just because the game is changing so much that running backs are now so much more undervalued than they were 10, 15 years ago. And it goes the same for receivers, that if there's a certain threshold for stats, maybe in the 80s and the 90s, does that change now that we're in so much more of a pass-happy offense, that threshold's probably, I don't want to say easier because playing in the NFL is not easy, but that's more attainable in today's NFL than maybe it was 20, 30, 40 years ago.
It has to change.
Yeah.
It changed. Just look back throughout history. You have people like Lynn Swann, you know, he's a Hall of Famer, but you look at his numbers and like, those are not Hall of Fame numbers if you're comparing him to the generation after.
Right.
You know, there's like,
but at the time.
But at the time, yes.
It was impactful.
Those were his numbers, and they were impactful. And he was on championship winning teams with the Pittsburgh Steelers. You can go even further than that to players. If you look at their stats and start comparing them to like modern day Hall of Famers, they don't even compare. But you got to understand the era they were playing in. So the running back criteria has to change. It has to. You have no choice, because no longer will you see backs ending their career 10, 12,000 yards rushing. Derrick Henry is basically at the end of his career, and he has 10,000 yards. Right. He just eclipsed the 10,000 yards. And we're arguing, we're trying to figure out, is he a Hall of Famer or not? So just think, moving forward, where they're using two backs rather than one, it's going to have to change.
Yeah.
You know, no,
you're not just going to have no more running backs in the Hall of Fame.
Exactly. So I think it's going to be a combination of both running and catching the football moving forward for running backs. I think that's going to be more so the criteria. How many yards per game or how many yards per carry did you average? Were you a dual threat running back? Because, again, I don't think you're going to see running backs. Nobody's going to break Emmitt Smith's records. Nobody.
Yeah.
I
you just don't run the football.
No,
like that
you don't run the football with one guy anymore. Nobody's going to break it.
Yeah.
So that record is going to stand. Now, Jerry Rice's record, it may be broken because the league is shifting. Unless there's a huge shift back to running the football, which there may be a possibility that could happen.
Yeah.
But I think within the next 10 years, 12 years, probably even longer than that, you're not going to see backs that have 10, 12,000 yards anymore because teams are using two backs instead of one. And then once you get to a certain age or you have an injury, it's like, we're done with you. Let's move on.
Or once your first contract is up and you want to get want to get paid, then you're kicked to the curb.
Exactly. Absolutely.
I also think an important thing that you mentioned is impact, where it doesn't show up in the stat sheet. You don't look at somebody's stats and see it, but just the impact that a player had. I think Derrick Henry has had that impact on the game and on the Tennessee Titans. Wes in Hermitage is on the line with a question for D-Mace. What's up, Wes?
Happy Friday. How are y'all doing?
Good.
We're doing good.
Derek, I got you one today, man. Why do we say amen in church after singing and not a woman?
I don't know.
Because they're hymns, not hers.
That's a good one.
I like that.
Man, I saw that today and was like, oh, yeah, that's Mason Worthy right there. We're going to Zany's eventually. I know it. I know it's going to happen.
Hey, man.
This year.
Zany, yes, 2024. Yeah, 2024. Yeah, it was 2025, but we moved it back, yes.
We're going to do it. We got a whole show, man. We can do it. But I may be on an island by myself, but I am going to be at the game on Sunday, and I'm going to be one of those people holding a sign that says, if this is Derrick Henry's last game, it's mine as well. I think he needs to be back. I really, really do. But to me, I kind of look at Derrick Henry for the Titans kind of how people view Pecorine for the Preds. And am I on an island by myself by saying that I think that Derrick Henry has done enough for this city, this team, and the organization where he kind of deserves a statue in front of this new stadium? I'll hang up and listen.
Thanks for your call, Wes. Appreciate it.
Thank you, Wes. Appreciate it. I mean, Derrick has done a lot for this team. You know, since he's become the starter for the Tennessee Titans, which was 2018. Statue, not. If they haven't given Stephen Eddy one, Bruce, then they're not going to sort of, you know, go out of their way. But
Ring of Honor?
Ring of Honor, definitely.
Yeah.
Definitely Ring of Honor. And if he wants to have, I mean, if he aspires to have some role in, you know, in the Titans front office, then that should be afforded to him as well, if that's what he wants to do. Because, again, you know, he's meant so much to this team. He was tasked to carry this team, and he did it. He didn't complain. He went about his job the way you're supposed to. And it's just unfortunate that because the game has changed, we now are questioning whether they will bring him back or not, you know, because he's 30 years old.
Yeah.
Like, he's 30. Like, just think, 30 years old. Like, some people don't even get into their careers until they're damn near 30. I look at my son, and he wants to be a doctor, and he's not going to really start until he's late 20s into his 30s.
Yeah.
And Derrick Henry is like, ah, we're washing, like, get ready to wash our hands. You got to put you out the pasture in a minute.
That's
like,
running backs.
My goodness gracious.
Like, old Yeller.
Exactly. It's like, man, this man is only 30 years old. He got a bunch of life left. But obviously, in football terms, it's, you know, you've taken so many hits. Mm-hmm. You know, biologically, you're 30, but chronologically, you're probably older than that because, or is it the other way around? But you're older than that.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
the
so
treads on the tires.
So people see that. So, but that's unfortunate. But it's not just a Derrick Henry problem; it's a running backs problem.
This is a league problem.
Yeah,
and you're even seeing it kind of trickle down into college football as well. They're running back at Ole Miss, Quinshon Judkins. He mm-hmm. wanted more NIL money, and Ole Miss said, "We're not going to pay a running back however much money that you want in NIL."
Mm.
So you're kind of you see a trickle up effect from mm-hmm. college football to the NFL in terms of style, but in terms of business that's done now that NIL mm-hmm. exists in college football, you really are seeing a trickle down effect. It's interesting. Roy is on the line with a question for D Mace. What's up, Roy?
Hey, what's up, everybody? What's up, D Mace?
Hey, what's going on, Roy?
So, kind of going to throw a curve here, kind of a crazy thing that I thought of. You know, NFL loves parody. It's mm-hmm. always kind of been of a parody league, you know. And, you know, the rumor mills with up in the Boston media, you know, saying Braves, Titans, you know, release or trade or whatever. I don't see that happening. But I possibly do see New England cutting ties with Bill Belichick. And being that Belichick was born in Nashville, lives in Franklin, and NFL loves parody, and it's a business. Tom Coughlin took a role like this. Bill Parcells took a role like this. Did you possibly see Belichick, maybe he's older, maybe not getting a head coaching job, maybe coming on as a special assistant or some kind of office VP role? He knows Vrabel. He knows Nashville. He knows football. And I'm just throwing this out there. I haven't heard it anywhere else, and it just hit me. I'm like, you know, I could see this happen. It's a parody league, and I've seen it happen over the years. And obviously, you played for a couple organizations, and you know about the business. And I think that would be a crazy smart move for both sides. What do you think?
Thanks for your call, Roy.
Thank you, Roy. I mean, it's not out of the realm of possibilities. I don't know how well that would work. And I say it's not out of the realm of possibilities. And what I mean by that is Bill taking that type of role with the NFL team. Like, just, I want to be a consultant. I don't want the stress of having a coach and evaluating all this other stuff. I just want to, you bring me in and I consult you. I can see that being something that Bill Belichick would do or could do in the NFL. I'm not sure, like, at this particular moment, it would be the Tennessee Titans. I don't think that would be a good match, considering, like, the dynamics that's going on right now.
Right.
You know, and then you bring in another alpha male, even though it's a consulting, you know, sort of deal.
It's still Bill Belichick.
It's still Bill Belichick, and you still got him in the room. But, I mean, if they were to do it, I wouldn't mind it. But, again, it would have to be you're just here to consult, mm-hmm. you know, give your advice on things. But they run a team, you know. But I could see him taking that role at another team. But I think Bill still wants to coach somewhere.
Bill doesn't seem to me like the kind of person that's like, look, you know what, I've been doing this for 40 mm-hmm. years. Now all of a sudden, I don't want to be a coach exactly. anymore. I think that if Bill Belichick still has the opportunity to coach, which if it's not with the Patriots mm-hmm. this upcoming season, he's going to have an opportunity to coach somewhere else. Mm-hmm. Washington, the Chargers, whoever it might be. He's going to have an opportunity to coach. I don't think that. Like, Bill strikes me as like a Nick Saban type.
Yeah.
Like he will be a coach until the day that he dies.
Yeah. I can't see Bill coming off the sideline unless he just had to.
Yeah.
If there was no other opportunity. Yeah, football is football. Mm-hmm. And football is him, just like you said, Saban. Saban, football and Saban are synonymous with one another. Yeah. It's like you can't say Saban without mentioning, you know, his tremendous run as a head coach in a sport that's so dominated by players. Right. He's been sort of the focal point of all of this that's been going on in college football and sometimes even pro, that he's still a lightning rod in the world of football.
Per Paul Kaharsky, this is coming out just a couple seconds ago, Will Levis is out on Sunday. Ryan Tannehill will be the starter for the Titans on Sunday, which is kind of what I expected, just yeah. based off of how Will Levis's progress has gone throughout the week. So we'll get into that. We'll also deep dive into the Titans matchup with the Jags on Sunday. Could this be the last time we see Derrick Henry in a Titans uniform? We'll get into that coming up next. Caroline Willie DeMace, 102.5, 106.3 The Game.
Tyler Reddick here from 2311 Racing. Another checkered flag for the books. Time to celebrate with Chumba. Jump in at ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See TNCs 21+. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.